15 minutes, so we'll move right into the next speaker because we want to leave a few minutes for the questions. Another speaker who really doesn't need an introduction is Stephen Downs. He's a research officer of Internet Logic at NRC. Stephen Downs has worked with the National Research Council since 2001 as a specialist in new media and online learning. While he is perhaps best known for his daily research newsletter, Old Daily, Steve has become a leading voice in the areas of leading learning objects and metadata, web blogs and education content syndication, digital rights, and related issues, for sure. His work also includes the development of an educational content syndication systems, Grasshopper, which you might have seen earlier this morning. Prior to joining the NRC, Stephen worked as an information architect at the University of Alberta and as an instructional designer at Simcoe Community College. He taught philosophy by distance for sure, for Athabasca University, and as a student, he served as an editor of a student newspaper at the University of Calgary and two team terms as president of the Graduate Student Association of the University of Alberta. Stephen lives in Moncton. It's my pleasure to introduce him to the session. Steve.
Thanks. Start off by unplugging my computer.
Well, thanks. It's a very hard act to follow, both of those talks. And I noticed on the chart that was shown earlier where energy was on the top, education was listed as number 8. So I know my place in the world. There's two talks here, really. The one talk I'll give you is the quick standard talk, which is on here. Then I'll give you the slides, which are the less standard talk. The standard talk is the list of developments that we can expect in the field of online learning the next 5 to 10 years. And I say it's the standard talk because there have been a number of reports released recently by a number of different bodies, some consultant groups, New Media Consortium, other groups. And the list is always pretty much the same. Education in the near to medium term future will involve much more use of social media, for example, social network sites like Facebook and Orkut, and more Web 2.0 applications. The web as a platform, the web as a place where you create things. Education in the next 5 or 10 years will involve much more in the way of games and simulations. And if you've done any reading or research on education, you've probably seen a lot of that recently. And everybody has in New Brunswick has been enjoying the opportunity to go to CFB Gagetown and look at the simulations that they've been running there for military training. And those of us who have been especially privileged have been able to fly and crash their virtual helicopter. Another major thing coming next 5-10 years in education is the semantic web, and there's a whole infrastructure in online learning that will be following from the semantic web. Learning objects, small mobile pieces of learning that are assembled on a just-in-time basis in order to compile learning resources on the fly. This is being tied together with a system for creating systems of e-competencies, ways of indicating what skills are needed for any particular profession or trade, and then aligning learning resources according to those competencies. And these all are in turn being aligned to form e-portfolios. These e-portfolios will show the competencies of a given individual as evidenced by the training or education that they've taken online. Another major trend coming to education and coming to just about every discipline in the world, including energy, is mobile computing, e-learning on your cell phone, e-learning on your PDA, e-learning on your wireless computer. And this involves not simply access to contents on mobile devices, but also the use of mobile devices as recording and media capture. And I forgot it. Hope I didn't just unplug my computer again. This is your typical example, so the flip camera. I've been having lots of fun because I got it just last week. And I've been wandering around, and I'm now recording you. And I'm now not recording you. See, this button's a little unreliable already. So very small mobile media, and now this will be part of a video that will make me famous sometime in the near future. In general, media capture, video capture, and audio capture is forming the next major trend that will be hitting e-learning the next few years through the next decade. Things like iTunes University making audio recordings of Stanford University lectures and other major university lectures are becoming prominent. The TED lectures, the TED videos in the United States are becoming more and more popular. And so, consequently, we're seeing in learning a great increase in capturing just regular learning events like this. This event here isn't being recorded, except by me. But in the future, it will be standard for something like this to be recorded and online within minutes of it being completed. That will be the norm, not the exception. And finally, the trend that we're seeing talked about a lot in the e-learning industry is virtualization. By virtualization, what I mean is that we separate the operating system from the underlying hardware. We have a virtualization layer in between. And what this does is it means that your computer can basically be stored on your memory stick, and then you just pop your memory stick into whatever hardware is available, and you run it on that hardware. And so in the first instance, we're seeing things like libraries on computer sticks, but we're moving toward an environment where we'll see entire universities on these memory sticks. You carry your university around with you. Okay, so that's the standard presentation. Now, I wanted to take a slightly different approach when I was preparing these slides earlier. And so I took basically an organization of learning. This is from an IBM presentation, which was blogged and posted on blog. And so I thought, yeah, that's a neat way to organize this. So because when we talk about learning, everybody assumes, well, there's just learning, but there's different kinds of learning, different ways of approaching learning. This chart breaks it down into four major areas: learning from co-location, such as what we're doing here, learning from collaboration, learning from interaction, and learning from information. Now, would I divide the world that way necessarily for all time? Maybe, maybe not, who knows. But it's a good way of dividing the different kinds of things that we do in order to learn, to look at technology from a different perspective. Because, you know, it's really tempting to just say, well, we're going to look at the technology and the technology will lead us. But really, especially in a field like learning, we want to be looking at what it is that we're up to, and what we're up to will be equally important in determining the direction of technology in the future. So we'll begin with co-location. This photograph is of MIT Media Lab, and this is the classroom of the future. And you might notice that it doesn't look even remotely like the classroom of today. Co-location is the place where we do things like coaching, mentoring, we do interaction, we play with toys. Some toys are small, other toys are very large, and we create things. And so the co-location is based on physical spaces, physical things, things that we put our hands on. And so our learning spaces, which now look like this, with a lectern at the front and the rows of seats, are more and more going to be resembling that, places where we play, places where we create. Indeed, even this conference, you notice we have the sessions in here and we have the session out in the hall, and I'll bet you more learning was taking place out in the hall where people were talking with the different inventors and that is taking place in a place like this. And we're going to see that more and more. We're going to be playing with new kinds of technology, ambient technology. I have another photograph I could have used of me holding a skull. It's not a real skull because I wouldn't hold a real skull. it's a plaster skull, and it was just printed by a 3D printer. And again, this is something I saw at the forces base in Gagetown, and they use 3D printers to create objects on the fly so that if you need a skull in a hurry, there it is. It doesn't sound useful, but it will be. Robotic devices. There's the whole Lego Mindstorms program. connecting Legos to computers to create devices. That's the sort of thing, getting your hands on things is the way to learn. And so we're going to be seeing that more and more. Our learning institutions will be less places where information transmission occurs and more places where we go to access technology, access physical things that are hard to get a hold of or that we would not normally have in the home, and to work together and play together. Second thing is collaboration. That's me on a typical day. That's actually my home, not my office, because most of my collaboration happens online. Collaboration involves conferencing, meeting, conversation, co-creation, teaming, networks, and all of that other kind of group and network sort of stuff. Collaboration is essential to learning because you need not only to learn things, you need to vet that learning by interacting with other people, and you need to inform your learning by getting other perspectives, other points of view, both on the material that you're learning and your own production, your own creation of learning. Collaboration is becoming more immersive, more multimedia-based. When I first started in this, collaboration meant typing little messages on a computer terminal into a MUD or leaving a message on Usenet. Now collaboration means being live online, hence the headphones and the microphone, and you don't see it there, but there's a little video camera as well. So it's becoming very immersive, and over time will become even more immersive. Collaborative environments, such as Second Life or even World of Warcraft, are less and less like presentation devices and more like environments that you move around in and make it play stuff in. Collaboration as well is becoming more mobile. Part of collaboration is going out, doing things together. I was involved in an incredible experience in 2006 where we collaborated by traveling through New Zealand. And there was a group of us who basically worked together and went from place to place in New Zealand holding seminars with people locally in New Zealand. And well, it was a lot of fun, but more to the point, we recorded everything. We recorded conversations, we recorded train trips, we recorded interactions, and all these sessions that we had were developed on the fly. So out of that, we developed this huge base of resources and information that people can use to follow the collaboration that we had in that project. That was under the heading of Future of Learning in Network World, if you're interested in looking for that. Interaction is the third major kind of educational activity. Interaction can vary everything from working with some computer-based training where you push buttons and answer questions and push more buttons, and it's not very interactive, but it's interactive, all the way through to games, simulations, training, learning objects. The idea here is to immerse yourself, to put yourself into an environment where you're dealing not with simple true-false kinds of things, but actually placing yourself into a complex environment where you're making decisions based on your knowledge in a complex environment with multiple factors happening at the same time. That was one of the worst sentences I've ever spoken. Game-based learning, James Paul Gee in Wisconsin and many others are talking about this. Games and simulations are becoming more realistic, more immersive, more fun, and also, very importantly, are becoming more multi-user. So it's not just you and the computer, it's you and the computer and somebody in Poland. You don't know what they're going to do, but it's interesting. Finally, information. This is what we normally think of as learning. I couldn't resist putting that picture up there because that's information in my household. That's your normal content, lectures, books, conferences, web pages, web videos, and the rest. The big trend we're seeing in learning is information, properly so-called, is becoming free and becoming ubiquitous. Business plans based on the sale of educational content are increasingly risky. There are large institutionally supported and federally mandated open educational resource initiatives out there. Everything from academic papers in health to Wiki Educator, which is being sponsored by the Commonwealth of Learning, which is an online wiki for open content. So those are four major ways of looking at learning. And so you see the traditional technology-driven presentation and also the more modern pedagogy-driven presentation. And he's standing, so I have to get out of here. Thank you for your time.
Absolutely, totally awesome presentations, and every time I hear you speak, I hear something different. But the second time in the last 2 weeks, I've heard Second Life on the phone the other day. So I'm going to try to get Second Life coming in. My wife comes downstairs and says, I got to pay a bill. Get up. Looks on the screen, says Second Life, and didn't really know what it meant, and so I had some explaining to do.
Your area seems to be, from an advancement perspective in dealing with the challenges that globally we face, is eons ahead of energy and health. In collaborating and moving forward. So we just had the three bring together. What can you two learn from the education sector on how to get to where his group is?
That's a great question.
I can start just by saying I'm really astounded at all the things that are now happening that are at a very beginning level. For instance, in Iceland, they now have a product which is a game that teaches children who have diabetics about managing and self-caring for their diabetics. And it's like a game so that the insulin runs around and it's sort of like a Pac-Man. It eats the sugars, and the children are making choices all the time about what they should eat and what they should do and what, you know, how they should handle all of this. So there's a lot of stuff you're talking about actually is beginning within healthcare. Still has a long way to go, but seems to be really being driven now by the lack of resources and the need to teach people and to share information in different ways, plus it's being consumer-driven.
What they seem to have done is bring the public sector and the private sector together very nicely. And I don't have a problem with profit. I'm all right with that slide that was up with Exxon, but my problem is that that's a heavy, heavy hammer to carry to influence government. So again, how do you bring private and public together?
On the energy front, your question was about, if I heard it right, about cooperating versus competing as much or defecting. So I mean, I can't help but to bring anybody here familiar with game theory at all, Prisoner's Dilemma, that kind of stuff. Anybody here? In a nutshell, this is really relevant to your question: is that if in a society there's a whole bunch of cooperators and we're all working together and there happens to be a very few defectors, those defectors will take advantage of the cooperators. They'll do extremely well. If you get too many of those defectors and the cooperators start disappearing, the defectors actually start hurting themselves and the whole average just falls to nothing and we destroy ourselves. Self-destruction is all defectors, right? I mean, should be obvious. There's a fine balance between cooperating and defecting in a society. I mean, all cooperators, if we were all cooperating, it would be ideal on the average. Our average would be maximized in terms of our well-being, but individually it would not be as good as those defectors who stand out among the cooperators. So this is the absolute dilemma in the energy game, is exactly that. And everything that Steve said, I mean, if we could get around this problem, would be very applicable to the energy game, except now we're dealing with national agendas, we're dealing with individual private sector agendas. We're dealing with people like, and as much as I love the guy very much, I mean, in a platonic sense, Mr. Buffett, who's a great, great person in terms of what he's doing, philanthropy and so on. But it's people like him who really can influence things in their direction because he's got a lot of money, right? And so it really comes down to the changing our whole way of thinking with energy. I mean, you can't expect cooperation to happen at a large level when there's so much at stake. That's just human nature. I hate to say this. I mean, if Sigmund Freud was in the room, he'd agree with me. If Albert Einstein was in the room, he'd hope I'm wrong, right? And but that's really as big as an answer as I can give you. I can't go into detail on that.
And yet cooperation happens on an international scale in the area of academic research.
Absolutely.
And knowledge generally. So it is possible. It happens in education, and the forces in education which tend to be disruptive are the forces that tend to act against that cooperation. The incursion of intellectual property regulation into the domain of research and education, for example, has the potential to undermine education in significant ways and undermine research in significant ways. That's been documented by many people. From my perspective, and to draw from the game theory, which is interesting that would come up in this context, particularly given the recent Wall Street crashes, which are classic evidence of that game theory in action. I mean, the only way to get around this is to increase the benefit of cooperation and to increase the cost or increase the risk of defecting. And that's basically what's happening in learning today, where if you share freely online, what happens is you get many times more benefit than you might expect because you begin to accrue information. If you share with other people, they share with you. And indeed, it only takes a small percentage of sharers in an online environment to make it work. There's the magic number of 0.1%, which is the typical number of people who contribute in an online community that make that community sustainable. And similarly, in an online environment, the cost of not sharing is increased because in an online environment, not sharing or being a defector is being someone who, for example, puts up a subscription wall or somebody who, for example, encumbers their product with digital rights management. Well, newspapers like the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal tried to put up subscription walls and found they were losing customers to like FARC and Drudge Report, who were rapidly becoming the voice of record. And even large companies such as EA, which is a major game company, they're known for their sports games and among other things, they released a game recently called Spore. Spore had heavy digital rights management attached to it, and this has significantly hurt sales of that game as people have rebelled totally against it. Also in the music industry, when Sony tried to enforce digital rights management by installing a rootkit on your computer, they faced a major consumer revolt as a result of that, and I don't think they've recovered from that. So I think those are the sorts of lessons that we're going to need to learn in healthcare and in energy, how to make the benefits of cooperation, how to increase the benefit of cooperation, like personal generation of power, perhaps, personal management of health records. Those are just guesses. But.
And that actually concludes the amount of time that we've been given.
I'm sorry.
Actually, I wanted to thank each and every one of the panelists for an absolutely fabulous presentation, and everybody here deserves great little credit for
I really
did keep the presentations within a very short time. So we have a hand for our panel, please. And as we segue into the next.